Women have been playing football for more than 150 years, and it's always been political. Some have been celebrated, but others have been ridiculed, criticized, and forgotten. This is the Forgotten 11, the hidden history of women's football.
I'm not going to the White House. No.
You know, there was a lot of critics talking about us about way back, so I suck on that one.
Give me the effing ball.
Playing like a girl means you're a badass.
Hi. My name is Chris, and this is The Forgotten 11. Today on the show, we're going back 100 years to Paris. But before we get there, one quick stop, and I'd like to apologize in advance. Some of my pronunciation of French words is terrible. So, to make up for that, here's the Marseillaise, the national anthem of France. Athletic club is perhaps a bit different from what we think of today. If you follow soccer closely, you may have heard of teams with odd names that maybe you didn't think about before. Atletico Madrid, or Racing Leipzig. So what's racing got to do with football? Well, some of these clubs were founded before football, or at least before football arrives in a particular country. And many of these clubs are not gym memberships like we see in the States. These clubs are often founded by a group of friends who like track and field, or football, or basketball, or whatever. Their members pool resources to rent a gym or a field to practice their sport. And their best members may go on to play in a new competition called the Olympics, or whatever the top tier for their particular sport is. So, let's look at a club called FC Barcelona. It was founded in 1899 by a few expats in Barcelona to play football. By 1908, they have just 38 members. So they changed their priorities a little bit. Their club will be open to everyone, regardless of their background, and they will welcome other sports. And the entire organization will be governed democratically by the members. The next year, they have 200 members. By 1919, they have nearly 3,000 members, and currently they have almost 200,000 members called socios. So FC Barcelona's first team is maybe 30 guys. They've got a B squad, a couple of youth teams, a women's team. They also have a basketball team, handball, hockey, and futsal. Futsal is 5-on-5 indoor soccer. But still, 200,000 people? What are they doing? Well, for many of these athletic clubs, they're the biggest enterprise in town. And they're often much more than a sports club. They have doctors, teachers, schools. They're almost municipalities in and of themselves. Now, many of these clubs are in really poor towns. 100 years ago, if the club had the resources, they might open their clinic doors to the community. If you're a member of the club, your kid could go see the team doctor. And that's no small thing when you're from a ghetto in Rio de Janeiro, even today. If your kid played soccer, maybe they can train with a team. If your kid's good, the club will pay for his training, his education, his food, and his housing. And for most people, the club and stadium are a short walk from home. There's no clear line between your club and your community. Femina Sport was founded in 1912 as a women's athletic club. Its first focus was gymnastics, swimming, and track and field. and even more track and field. By 1917, they have certainly heard of the success of the women's teams in England. In September of 1917, they take to football. First, they're playing matches against themselves, but the head of Femina Sport, a gentleman named Pierre Pais, was a high school gymnastic teacher. He realized that the Femina team had no competition, so he helped organize matches between the Femina team and high school boys' teams. Among the ranks of the Femina women's team are track and field stars Teresa Brulé, French champion of the high jump, her sister Jean Brulé, Suzanne Lebrard, the world record holder at the time for the 100-yard hurdles, Germaine Delapierre, French champion of the 100-yard hurdles and 100-yard dash, Lucy Cadiz, champion of the 1,000-meter and 1918 world record holder. In the fall and winter of 1917 and 18, they play 16 matches against high school boys' teams. In about February of 1918, the Union de Société Française de Sport Athlétique bans men's teams from playing against women. But on February 17th, 1918, Femina play a match, and in the audience are a number of women who want to form their own teams. The first to do so was a team called En Avant, forward in French. By November, a third team, Academia, has formed. Because of the USFSA's ban in January, Pierre Pais and a director from En Avant formed the Fédération de Société Féminine Sportive de France, the FSFSF. In English, the Federation of Women's Sports Societies of France. They do this in 1918. Interestingly, the French Football Federation for the men is created in April 1919, a year after the Women's Football Association. Teams are being formed slowly and mostly in Paris. But Femina and En Avant are determined to continue. By 1919, the FSFSF has formed a women's championship. Femina and En Avant are the only entrants. They play two matches. Femina wins the first match. The second was a 0-0 draw. So Femina is the first French champion. Around this time, there are at least 9 Parisian teams, including Les Sportives, Sportives de Riem, Les Rues Sportives Féminines. And there's also now a provincial tournament dominated by teams from Marseille. In 1920, there are 3 teams in the championship tournament, Femina Sport, En Avant, and Academia. After a double round robin, Femina Sport and En Avant are level on points. They play a tiebreaker, and En Avant wins by a single goal. But now there's also a cup to play for, called the Cup of Encouragement. The teams in this tournament are 2 teams from Femina, En Avant, Les Sportives, and École Haute Enseignement Commercial, which is, I think, School of Commercial Business. En Avant wins this cup as well, but it's beginning to look suspiciously like the French women have formed their own league. Here, we should mention a woman named Alice Miat. She became the president and treasurer of the Fédération de Société Féminine Sportive de France, the FSFSF, in 1919. She joined Femina in 1912 at the foundation and was a champion rower and huge advocate for women's sports. In the 1920s, she was one of the main activists who fought for the inclusion of women in the Olympic Games. Before Alice Miat, women were restricted to figure skating, archery, tennis, and a handful of other sports. In the early 1900s, she lived in London, and she spoke English. In 1920, she helped organize the French women's soccer team that would tour England. The French team included members of Femina, En Avant, and Academia. A Among other things, Alice Miout was good at telling a story. Before they went to England, she fed the English press in Paris little news stories about their coming tour of England. By the time the team arrived in England, they were mobbed by the press. The Daily News announced their matches on the front page. When the French team finally arrived in Preston to play the Dick Care Ladies, the entire town turned out to greet them. Thousands lined the streets of Preston, along with a full brass band who escorted them to their hotel. The opening match against Dick Care Ladies, played at Preston's Deepdale Stadium, saw a crowd of 25,000 spectators, a record for the stadium at the time for men's or women's football. The French team was described as small and delicate, almost like mannequins. They walked onto the pitch in unison. The Dick Care Ladies, on the other hand, stormed onto the pitch before the match. The first match was 2-0 to the Dick Care Ladies. The next match was 5-2 for the Dick Care Ladies. And a third match saw a 1-1 draw. In that match, after the French goal, the French player celebrated with a flip. Remember, Femina Sport originally practiced gymnastics. The last match of this tour was going to be played at Stamford Bridge in London. At this point, the entire national press and the nation was enthralled by the two teams. In this match, Jeannie Harris was unfortunately knocked unconscious early in the game, and this was before substitutions were allowed, so the Dick Care Ladies were down to 10 players. The French women won this match 2-1. Later that same year, the Dick Care Ladies were invited to play in France, and of course they went. They won 4 matches and drew 1. But more importantly, tens of thousands of French fans came to watch the women play football. Okay, this isn't soccer, but you've got to hear about it, and it will come up later in another episode. In 1919, Alice Miout asked for women to be included in the Olympic Games, in more sports. She was turned down. So, being the woman that she was, she founded the Fédération Sportive Féminine Internationale, and in 1921 held the first Women's Olympic Games in Monte Carlo. In 1922, they did it again. 7 nations and 300 women participated in front of crowds of up to 20,000. 18 women broke world records at this Women's Olympic Games. The International Olympic Committee lost their minds. Not only were women running around sweating, they were using the word Olympics. They convinced Alice Miout to at least change the name in exchange for adding more women's sports events to the official male-controlled Olympic Games. Miout's tournament continued, but it became the Women's World Games, and it continued until 1938. Each time, they were trying to force the IOC's hand to add more women's events at the Olympics. Next time you watch women competing at the Olympics, take a moment to remember the Women's World Games and Alice Miout's efforts. In France, women did not get the right to vote until 1944. Now fine, there was World War II to worry about, but that's still pretty late for Europe. But as I've said before, women's soccer is always political. Here's Alice Miout on that. Quote, "Women's sports of all kinds are handicapped in my country by the lack of playing space. We have no vote. We cannot make our needs publicly felt or bring pressure to bear in the right quarters. I always tell my girls that the vote is one of the things that they will have to work for if France is to keep its place with the other nations in the realm of feminine sport." In France, the 1920-21 season has 4 teams, and now there's no doubt. This is a league. Probably the first women's league in the world. Remember that the English women play competitive matches, but they don't have a league. They don't play for a title. They've played for cup titles, but not a league. The English Ladies Football League will make an attempt in 1921, but that doesn't survive the year. Femina Sport, En Avant, Academia, and La Ruche are the teams that play in the French league. Each team plays the others twice. The final table has En Avant clear of Femina by two points, and the newcomers LaRouche didn't manage to win or draw a single match. In May of 1921, a French team that was mostly Femina returned to England. They lost 5-1 to the Dick Kerr's ladies, but easily beat Huddersfield, Atalanta, Stoke, and Plymouth. The 1921-22 season in France is busy. The league now has 16 teams, and it's specifically a Parisian league, so just Paris. Those teams include Le Sportif Paris, Femina, AS Amicale, En Avant, Rouge Sportive Feminine, Asnières Feminine, Cadet de Gascogne. But there's more. There are now women's teams and leagues forming all over the country. In addition to the Paris League, there's also the Cup of Encouragement, the Cup of Hope, and the Cup of France in early 1922. And there's more teams forming everywhere. This year, in Paris, the Sportive de Paris end the league on top of the table and qualify for the championship. They won 2-0 in Stade de Reims on March 12, 1921. In November 1921, Femina, Avant, LaRouche, and Sportive de Paris play for the Cup of Encouragement. Femina ends up at the top of the table by a single point and wins that cup. And about this time, other teams, November 1921, other teams are also playing for the Cup of Hope. And this cup is telling in the information that I don't have. All I have is a listing of teams from the Paris region, which is Asnières Femina, UA Argenteau, Cadet de Gascogne, and AS Amicale. But this is a group stage table. There were other groups. The group matches take place in November, but the final match is played on January 15th. So the Cup of Hope seems to be played something like a World Cup, with a group stage and then a knockout stage. Now, this is a bit of math, and I don't have proof, but just bear with me. The current men's team, or men's World Cup, with 32 teams, is about 6 weeks. The Women's World Cup, with 24 teams, takes about a month. So let's walk through this. If you only play once a week, and you take time off for the holidays, you've still got 10 weeks to play your knockout matches. The World Cup has 4 knockout stages, with 16 teams entering. The Cup of Hope has time for 32 teams in the knockout stage. Now, I don't know that there were 32 teams, but there were in the Cup of Hope, but there was a lot of time for it. And it's entirely possible that the Cup of Hope was a huge tournament. The final match was between AS Turquenois from the north of France and AS Amicale from Paris. Unfortunately, no one seems to have recorded the score, but the winner was AS Turquenois. In March of 1922, the women's teams play for the French Cup. These teams are Sportive de Paris, Asnières Femina, Femina Sport, Navarre AC, Sportive de Reims, Cadet de Gascogne, LaRouche, AS Amicale, AS Turquenois, AU Argenteau. The final was played between Le Sportif de Paris and LaRouche. Le Sportif won 5-0. The 1922-23 season seems 18 teams in the Paris League. Do you remember Flory Redford from the Dick Kerr Ladies? Star striker, 170 goals in 1920. In 1923, and maybe 22, she went to Paris and she played for Femina. This is the first women's international transfer that I found. In the fall of 1923, she would join Stoke United in Barcelona to play a French side, and then return to England to rejoin the Dick Kerr Ladies against Stoke United. From 1923 to 1932, Femina Sport win the league every year. The records are a bit sparse, but it seems that the league continued to expand. Each year, Femina Sport finds a steeper road to the championship. And then, in 1932, the Fédération de Société Féminine Sportive de France, the FSFSF, decides to put its energy into the Women's World Games. They will no longer support women's football. Now, there's something called the League of Paris, and it seems to have been founded in 1919 as a men's soccer organization. In 1932, either this organization or one with exactly the same name in Paris sanctioned and organized the Women's League of Paris. For the 1933 and 34 season, 10 teams enter, and Femina wins the championship again. Followed by Dunlop Sport, CA Paris 14th is the name of the team, they win at 36, and 7 teams enter the tournament in 1936 and 1937. The winner was not recorded. While the game is popular enough with fans in Paris, the press from the very beginning of women's soccer in France are wildly critical of the women's teams. Some going so far as to say that the women's game is disgusting. After 20 years of sexist rants against the women's teams, the league seems to have dissolved in about 1938. But the women keep playing, because in 1940, World War II has begun. Much of France is occupied by Germany and Italy. The new French government, called Vichy France, feels the need to ban women's soccer matches. Thanks for listening, as always. If you like the show, please share it or leave a review. If you'd like to see some pictures of these teams and other goodies, please join our Slack channel, check the show notes, and you can follow the show on Twitter at ForgottenXI. Next time on the show, we're going to Italy, and wow, there'll be fascists, partisans, football, and some very clever women, along with the Forgotten World Cup. See you next time. L'école haute enseignement commercial. Navarre Sportive de Rome. Something like that.